Hi, I'm Amanda Russell, the communications consultant for Western United Dairies, and this is Seen and Heard. This week on the podcast, we have Anya Radova on, the CEO of Western United Dairies, and she's going to be giving us an update on the avian influenza.
Did you know that you can turn your dairy manure into cash? Bennett Environmental is offering above-ground dairy digesters at no cost to you. These systems can also remove nitrates from your lagoons to help you comply with water board regulations. Our proven above-ground technology will generate income for your dairy into the foreseeable future. Because we truck the renewable natural gas off-site, your dairy can profit regardless of your location. Bennett Environmental, turning your wastewater liabilities into sustainable assets. Learn more at bennett-environmental.com.
Pacific Gas and Electric is here to remind you that signs keep you safe. Sections of our natural gas transmission pipeline travel underground and beneath agricultural land. For the safety of you, your family, and your employees, pipeline markers are placed to indicate the approximate location of the pipe as a reminder to use extra care. Removing a pipeline marker creates a serious safety hazard. To have additional markers placed or report damaged or missing markers, please call your PG&E account manager or our Agricultural Customer Service Center at 877-311-3276. To learn more, visit www.pge.com/agsafety. Remember, signs keep you safe.
Welcome back to Seen and Heard. Today we have Anya Radova on, who has an update for us on the avian influenza. So, hey, Anya.
Hey, Amanda. Happy Friday, everybody, if you're listening to this over the weekend.
What news do we have this week?
Well, I guess no news is good news. We do have quite a bit more genetic mapping of the virus that's been happening, as I alluded to a couple weeks ago when we recorded the first one. But as of today, April 19th, California is still high pathogen avian influenza for dairy cows free. So that's really exciting because I think there were a lot of predictions that there was just no way to keep this out of California. And so I have to think one of two things: that our extraordinarily ratcheted up approach at our border crossings by our state veterinarian and CDFA have actually helped, that there are additional guidance and quarantine for cattle coming in from affected areas really assisted in preventing further spread of that virus. And then I also have, unfortunately, because I work with farmers, a very high suspicion that farmers are just, they're simply, you know, not randomly testing. If the cows are not presenting symptoms, there's really no need to test. And so we can talk a little bit about some of the background information about the virus, how a team of kind of junior veterinarians started to notice that it was actually dairy cats dying, and that's how they were able to trace it to avian flu, if that's interesting to people.
That is actually, that I didn't realize that was what was happening.
It's a very interesting story. And so it started off with some grad students essentially starting to notice that milk production was dropping in Texas, and they were going from kind of dairy to dairy and seeing the same thing, but then, not thinking much of it. There was a lot of floods earlier this spring over in Texas. There was some challenges there. So as they started, you know, collecting random samples and sending them back to the lab, it was still not, flagged. But then dairy cats started to die. And barn cats are really common on farms for our listeners who may not be farmers. They are definitely there to kill rodents. They provide some companionship. And they tend to multiply. They don't need a ton of help to survive. And a lot of times they are given the milk from either cows that have been pulled off the milking facilities so that it doesn't go to waste and it doesn't pile up. We really, in some places, have a hard time putting it in lagoons. So it's really good to have a system of dairy cats that are there to lap up the extra milk. And so it started like dairy by dairy telling their veterinarian that their cats were all dying. And then when it wasn't really clear, it was like, hey, you know, I'm actually missing my dairy cats. Like, we don't have any dairy cats. And so after a while, the dairy cats started getting sent into the lab. And, they had died from swollen brains, which usually that is a side effect of influenza. They didn't have rabies or anything like that. And so they really started digging into these cats, literally, gross. But generally speaking, that's how they were able to isolate that this was a mammalian gland issue that was really causing cow-to-cow transmission of highly pathogenic avian influenza. And so, again, the initial herds that were affected in northern Texas and southwest Kansas, same thing. All of those infected cattle then were able to be traced back to dead cats. And the cats had, you know, they had drunk the contaminated milk. And so, that was, I think, kind of the initial phase in turning on the light that we have a real problem here with just the lactating animals. And so the veterinarians that are credited with learning this information, I think, are really important. One was Dr. Barb Peterson. She works for Sunrise Veterinary Service out of Texas and Amarillo. And the other one was Dr. Drew Magstadt, who works out of Iowa State University. And so I think they went to school together, and they were the ones that started talking about this and sharing the fact that it was dairy cats specifically that seemed to be passing away from this disease. So it's a lot easier to do a necropsy on a cat than it is a dairy cow. And so that's how they were able to kind of figure out that link. So I think I'm a former biochemist, recovering biochemist. So I think that type of stuff is really, really interesting.
Yeah, I think so too. I had no idea that that's how they found or made the link. So that kind of, let's pivot there to like new security measures. Is there anything that has been updated this week or any new news security or biosecurity wise?
Yeah, so in Western's update on Monday, this coming Monday, the 21st, no, 22nd, excuse me, we will have new guidance from both USDA and CDQAP, our California Dairy Quality Assurance Program, about some tightening protocols. It's very similar to what we shared 2 weeks ago, which is ensured enhanced biosecurity measures. And so, again, the disease syndrome has not been reported in California or in beef cattle. And I think that's really important for people that are doing a drive-by listen in their tractors right now. But there is epidemiologic evidence that the disease can be passed from infected herds to uninfected herds through the transfer of infected or asymptomatic cattle. And so that's concerning. And that is why, as I mentioned 2 weeks ago, there are additional protocols for protecting your farm. And so you can't really like swing a barn cat around right now without, you know, hitting some new guidance. And so I think it's really critical for producers to take a look at that guidance. It does have a lot more specifics about quarantining, especially the non-lactating animals from the lactating side of the herd. We want to make sure that the farmers are able to prioritize very specific preventative actions around their commodity barns. Because as we can talk a little bit about the Twitterverse, but we know that this virus, like 99% probability of being transmitted by migratory birds, despite some earlier efforts the last 10 days to tie it to something else. So a lot of the science right now is going into identifying the genetic sequencing that will help them understand, is it being transmitted through water? Is it being transmitted through the stock ponds or the commodity barns? Again, if you've ever seen a dairy between spring and summer here in California, they are covered with migratory birds. Up north, we have the Aleutian goose. Down south, we have a lot of blackbirds, herons, egrets. So all of these birds potentially could be moving the virus around. At the moment, they've not identified the tricolored blackbird as a carrier, which I have mentioned in the past, but it's still really important to kind of understand the tarping procedures that are being recommended. And then again, the prevention of cow to cow is really where USDA has added some interim guidance about how to protect that herd.
We will have that update in our newsletter early next week, and it'll also be on the website. But is there any other information that producers need to know coming into this next week? Anything else that they could be implementing on their dairies?
Yeah. Well, I think, and I don't want to be like a doomsdayer, but wild birds introduce bird flu to the Midwest cattle, and that could happen in California too. In fact, our migratory pattern typically tends to really hit in the fall when these birds are flying south, right? They're now making themselves comfortable because the weather is great. So we probably have a much longer vigil, a much longer watch period than the Midwest at the moment. And genetic sequencing of the virus samples from both the affected cows and the wild birds have found that it's the same avian influenza strain. And that lineage has been circulating within North American wild birds for the last several years. So the tarping, there's some new procedures around, you know, stock watering areas, which I think is really helpful. There's definitely some new procedure about barn cats, which is just kind of tangential to the earlier conversation. There are some interim guidances for employees that might help someone not, you know, get conjunctivitis or pink eye. But the list of recommendations is growing almost every single day. So take a look at that CDQAP guidance document that we will send out on Monday. I think we'll update our website with anything that comes out new there. But generally, it's simple management techniques. I would also really emphasize that now is not the time to have a ton of huge tours, especially dairy to dairy. If you have a hoof trimmer or someone that travels dairy to dairy, it is likely they are already taking specific PPE and other sanitary, phytosanitary precautions like wearing booties, you know, mask, gloves, stuff like that. I think that's really, really important right now since we do know that it can spread from cow to cow in an asymptomatic setting.
Okay. Anything else to leave producers with?
I think that what we are seeing on this, the differences in the disease severity is suggesting that post-infection biosecurity can really help. So rapid quarantining of that animal or animals following what you're seeing as a potential symptom here. Again, huge drop in rumination, huge drop in milk production, like immediately taking that cow off the line. Whereas unfortunately for Texas, you know, they didn't know. So they weren't really, I think it's not that they weren't tight on that. Obviously any affected cow is removed from the milking supply. But what we're seeing is that although that was a terrible event for those farms out in the Midwest and Texas, the percentages of infections and milking strains are really going down. And so it kind of suggests that the possibility that the internal biosecurity measures, if they're implemented quickly, really limits the herd spread. And so I think that that's something I want farmers to take away from this conversation is these biosecurity measures. I know sometimes we roll our eyes at their extensiveness, but in this case, they really seem to be helping. It's just basic disease prevention. And so allowing for this timely herd mitigation strategy with your veterinarian, I think has really assisted California in staying HPIA free.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see from a producer perspective now where there aren't any confirmed cases in California. So it all kind of, it does sound a little bit doomsday prepper-ish, but in being proactive and implementing these procedures now, it could definitely save from worst case scenario down the road should anything happen.
Yeah. And unfortunately for those 26 herds in those 8 states, you know, you got to learn the hard way. We've learned the hard way a lot of times in California, but we've learned from their mistakes. There is a lot of conversation this past week around wild bird deterrence on dairies. This is not going over very well within the conservation community, right? Talking about how we're trying to protect wild birds. They're on the endangered species list in a lot of cases. And then deterring them from potential habitat is kind of going over like a lead balloon, which is why the media got a hold of this ridiculous story the last 10 days. And it was finally concluded, I think, in the LA Times yesterday on the 18th of April. The ridiculous assertion from a ridiculous activist somewhere out in the Midwest was that we were feeding chicken litter, which is essentially dead chickens, directly to livestock. And anyone who's been around Mad Cow or understands some of the regulations about not feeding ruminants to other ruminants understands that is a ridiculous assumption, especially in California. I can only speak with a lot of authority about what we've had to learn in California, but this unfortunately became a Twitter phenomenon, which Western, I hope, did a very good job debunking. Western was featured prominently in this LA Times article, as was Dr. Michael Payne, is with our California Dairy Quality Assurance Program. And CDFA had to step up and say, this is not a practice, especially that would result in HPIA spread or contamination. So a protein meal that's mixed in as kind of a high-grade premium feed product, sort of like compost and fertilizer, is not uncommon to be fed in a mixed ration or a TMR. But we do not just scoop up dead chickens and feed them to cows, as was the assumption by many anti-animal ag activists. So we've debunked that, but now the focus is back where it should be, which is squarely on wild birds and deterring wild birds on dairies. And so what these researchers will continue to do, and we will update our farmers as we know more, is start to recommend a series of deterrents around flyway patterns, timelines of those migratory birds, permitting and legal requirements around wild bird mitigation, as opposed to just like you can't just shoot them. So how do we deter them from coming on the property? How do we haze them? And then really making sure that California farmers understand what a comprehensive list of wild birds is that may contain a strain of HPAI. And I think that's important because there's a lot of birds that they've never tested it in, so they just may not know. But there has been many thousands of tested cases in California where they know who is a general carrier. And unfortunately for our North Coast guys, the Aleutian goose is a carrion of avian influenza.
Okay, that's a lot of information. And I know that we've covered this topic for the last 3 weeks. So I just want to remind everybody again that we'll have an update in the newsletter next week. And we're doing our best to keep the landing page on the website updated with all of these resources as well. So you can always go back and reference there. All right. Well, thanks, Anya, for taking the time to come on today. I hope you have a great weekend. And thanks for everyone for tuning in.
Have a fantastic day, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to Seen and Heard this week. To keep up with the work that Western United Dairies is doing, please follow us on Facebook and Instagram or on our website at wudairies.com.
Yosemite Farm Credit is the farmer's choice for agriculture financing. As a farmer-owned cooperative, we are dedicated to serving our neighbors in the agriculture community with financial products and services tailored to your operation and backed with the relationship you can trust. Whether you're purchasing real estate, making improvements to the dairy, or wanting to purchase or lease equipment, we're here to help our members prosper. Visit our website at YosemiteFarmCredit.com to find a branch location nearest you.
Thank you to the Western United Dairies' generous business sponsors, the Morningstar Company, Holt of California, Farm Credit Alliance, PG&E, Arada, Swingle, Van Egmond and Goodwin Law Offices, Yosemite Farm Credit, F&R Ag Services, Moss Energy Works, California Dairy Magazine, Bennett Environmental, and Common Good Water. We appreciate our sponsors and thank them for their continued support. While Western United Dairies respects the varied views of our guests, please note that the opinions expressed in the Seen and Heard podcast may not necessarily reflect the positions of the Western United Dairies Board of Directors or our sponsors. If you would like more information on how to sponsor Western United Dairies or this podcast, please send us an email at info@wudairies.com.